Welcome to our call this evening, our Tuesday night celebration of life, and this is truly a great night to be celebrating life. We have been talking about, the last few weeks, connecting with people, and using our mind constructively, being present in the now. These are three foundational areas of thought. Now we're going to start taking on some of the things that happen when those aren't functioning always so well. If we're having challenges of mental creation, that we've got vivid visualization, that we might be into fantasy or catastrophe, we're not enjoying that joy in the journey, we're beating ourselves up. When we get exhausted like that, sometimes it's hard to be focused and disciplined, have discipline, focus, effort, and action. We know that the pain is not in the change. The pain is in the resistance to the change. It's kind of like if you've ever ridden a snowmobile and you lean one way, leaning really doesn't do very much good. Even on a motorcycle, you have to kind of get your behind out there a little bit, get your butt moving. You have to really move your behind to make it work. And sometimes we get stuck in patterns and we think we're changing, but we're really just kind of leaning without moving our butt, so to speak. So I hope you don't mind that reference tonight, because tonight we're going to talk about actually creating something different. And we're going to talk about a set of thought processes and discipline and structure, bottom left-hand side in your assessment, that are some of the most stubborn, resistant, rebellious thought processes. Now, for entrepreneurs, those thought processes can be very valuable if we manage them. If we don't manage them, we're going to be resisting structure, we're going to be resisting authority, we're going to be needing to be right, we're going to be closed to other ideas. This is just not a great place to be, because this is what we know. Almost always, the very things that we want to have in our lives are right behind the very things we're resisting. So if you've got a paper and pen handy, I want you to take just a moment and see if you can, right off the top of your head, write two or three things that you've been resisting. Two or three things that you've been resisting. Let's start with your business. For example, if you have a home-based business, do you resist making phone calls? Do you resist making phone calls? If you're in a business where it depends on people being enrolled into your vision, are you resisting having those conversations? If you're in a place where you could just have a wonderful conversation with a person, do you sometimes cower, sometimes resist having that conversation? When it comes time to organizing your desk, and I'm sitting here looking at mine tonight after a crazy day, do we resist doing the work of cleaning things up and getting things organized? Do we resist keeping schedules? Do we not want to be tied down? Do we resist authority when someone comes in and tries to make us do something in a certain way? Do we just throw the baby out with the bathwater? What's happening to us in terms of discipline and structure? Are we our best boss? Well, here's just write down a couple of those things, because we're going to talk about those in a moment. When we're entrepreneurs, we talked about this, I think, about 2 weeks ago. Entrepreneurs are their own, maybe it was last week, we're our own worst boss. We step back and we force ourselves to do all kinds of things. I will command and I will obey my own command, Og Mandino says in scroll number 9. I will act now, lest I act. I will perish in a life of failure, misery, and sleepless nights. So let's take a look at these measurements. I want to talk about the first three primarily, and I want to open this up. As you're talking about things that you're resisting, let's talk about how we can break through this, because there's no reason to dream at all if we're unwilling to take on those things that we're resisting, because what we want is right behind them. This first measurement, discipline. Entrepreneurial people have this out of balance, orange or red, 99.5% of the time. That's worthy of a discussion. 99.5% of the time. Which means if you're in an entrepreneurial type business, part of the reason that you're an entrepreneur is you think outside the box. You're not conventional. You're not as conventional. us take a look at that measurement discipline and say, wow, do I follow rules? Because entrepreneurs are not rule followers. They're problem solvers. They're not rule followers. They're problem solvers. So we say, okay, is that a bad thing? Not at all. If we use this thought process to think outside the box, looking for creative solutions, we're most likely going to find something creative. That's what makes the world go round. Challenge. Number one, we think outside the box. We decide how the box ought to look. And then we want everybody in our box. And we need to be right about it. This can be very dangerous. So finding a great idea is one thing. Helping others enroll in the vision is something entirely different. That takes us back up to connection with people. Stepping into their world, listening, asking questions, finding out what their challenges are and their desires and hopes and dreams, asking questions to validate we understand till they feel understood. We know that their idea is attached to their self-worth. So if we insist they come here, we dismiss their ideas, we are devaluing them as human beings. So just know that when you're creative and we surrender to this thought without being conscious, there's a risk that you're going to want everybody to go your way, do it the way you see it. They may in fact share your thought process, which means the hair raises up on the back of the neck every time you say my way or the highway. That's a great challenge. The other challenge, and I can't give you a percentage for how often it shows up, I just know it's a significant portion of the time. We have been living in a world with structure. You know, you go to school at a certain time, you get out of school at a certain time. You need to have a certain amount of education. If you go into the military, you got to march to that drummer and follow those orders. When you get your first job, you most likely have a boss. For an entrepreneurial person, that's a very difficult thing to do. And it's like, if I can ever break out of this, I will never be in that kind of structure again. So disciplined actually may have us resist structure for structure's sake, because we don't want to be pinned down. So just ponder for a moment. Just close your eyes with me, unless you're driving. Just ponder about how you feel about getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, exercising for 45 minutes, reading for 45 minutes, having a little meditation, a little prayer if that's in your belief system, getting ready for the day so that by 7 o'clock you are ready to rock the world. You have some breakfast, get showered and dressed, and you get to an office by 8 o'clock. Could be in your own home. It could be a carpet commute down the hallway. At 8 o'clock, you've got a plan to execute. You have phone calls to return. You have phone calls to make. You've got leads to follow up on. Can you feel it? And you work tirelessly till all of a sudden you realize you're hungry. It's not at noon. You just realize you're hungry. So you'll get a light sandwich or a salad or a green drink or a shake or something. And then you just dive back in. Quite often, true entrepreneurial people eat right at their desk because they love what they do. They don't want to leave it. They're excited. They're on the next piece, the next discovery. You work through the day. There's no quitting time. You go till you're done. And sometimes you stop intentionally to go have dinner with the family, spend some time, tuck the kids in bed. Have a phone call at 9:30 tonight with a client. Today he needs to talk for a few minutes, and he's leaving tomorrow for a trip, and he's working all day as I was, and wants to tuck his kids in bed. 9:30 we'll talk. 9:30 isn't like that's. I can't talk at 9:30. Entrepreneurs do what needs to be done. Address the needs of the clients, grow their business. How do you feel about that? Do you feel a little confined, restricted? Because if you do, just know it's okay. Just become aware of it. Because generally it's a rebellion against something that you haven't enjoyed. If you've been working somewhere and you don't really like what you're doing or didn't like what you're doing, it's understandable to have that natural reaction. So don't beat yourself up for having it. Just become aware of it and say, wow, I'm resisting the structure. And if you can come to this realization, I'm resisting it because it used to be imposed on me. But why would I ever resist the structure I'm going to impose on me? Why would I resist that? I am going to command, and I am going to obey my own command. So just feel that moment of recognition. Wow, I've really been in resistance. I've been unwilling to really pay that price. Oh, I'm busy, busy, busy. I'm trying to convince myself I'm really working. But I'm not really goal-driven. I'm not really intentional in what I'm doing. I'm just going through the motions so I can feel good about doing the motions. Well, entrepreneurs don't care about being busy. They don't care about activity. Their primary objective is a result. So everything is driving a result. So just take a look at that discipline structure and say, am I a creative thinker? Think outside the box. When I figure out what the box ought to look like, do I want everybody in there? Do I need to be right about them? Am I going to crush people? Two, am I in open rebellion against structure? And because of what it's done to me in the past, because I wasn't working passion-driven, I was working for somebody else, doing what they told me to do. And I got so tired of that routine, that boring routine. Is there any possibility that now I'm making those decisions for myself, I'm still carrying that residual baggage of resisting someone else's structure? And could I realize this is my choice? I want to. I get to. I choose to. This is my life. This is my life. I will command and I will obey my own command. Just ponder that for a moment. Just ask that question. Have I been resisting structure because of past experiences with structure? And what would happen if I saw myself as the boss, calling the shots and following my own direction? Want to, get to, choose to. That'll help you manage discipline more effectively so that you'll be able to take it on, see it for what it is, and see the blessing that it brings in our life. Because when we become self-directed, when we can do what we do because we want to, then we don't resist the structure, we actually embrace it. It's there to serve us. To serve us. Not for us to serve it. When someone else is trying to impose it, we have to serve it. Now it's going to serve us. Just a little bit of a reframing for us. How to view discipline. Now let's go to this next place. We call it being teachable. We changed that word. The new assessment that's coming out this summer is called being respectful. We're going to change the word at the top, respectful, to being observant in connection. And this we're going to call respectful. Just respecting, not disrespecting, just respecting authority. The question is, if your measurement is orange or red, and it is in entrepreneurs almost 90% of the time, I can get you in trouble. I remember saying this one time, and I remember coming off a mute and starting to laugh. Maybe you're still on the phone with us tonight. This is when we're resisting the person in authority who's trying to impose a structure. This isn't the structure itself. It's the person trying to impose it. And the question that's asked by the measurement is, can we see the practical benefit in following the structure? Entrepreneurs have a hard time doing that. Because practical benefit means, can I see that they're the boss? They cut my check. And if I say something that's not appropriate, they may fire me and I could lose my job. Entrepreneurial people aren't trying to protect their job. They don't value title. and position. Entrepreneurs only value contribution. If you can't contribute, you're not of value. If you haven't got great ideas, you're not of value. If you can't jump in and help us make it happen, you're not of value. Just know that's how entrepreneurial people think, so it makes it a little difficult. When they get placed in a position where someone has power or authority over them, and that person then tries to impose structure that's unwanted. It's a challenge. So just take a look at that one. Keep asking yourself, if I'm resistant to authority, which means any time I'm working, I could be entrepreneurial, but I've sold or I'm servicing a client. The client's paying the bill. Client's making the decisions. Even entrepreneurial people end up having someone in a position of authority over them. It's generally the person who controls the purse strings in a transaction. Where did I get this resistance? Where did this come from? So just write that down on your paper tonight. If this measurement is orange or red, when did I start resisting authority? Was it from a parent who was controlling? Was it from an ex-spouse or companion that was controlling? Is it from a boss, former boss that was controlling? Who was controlling you? And it's as if you were to say, if I ever get out of this, I will never, ever allow another person to have that much control over me. That'd be the feeling. You may not have said those words, but if you can feel that, see if you can identify where it came from. Because this is one you're going to want to manage. It's okay as an entrepreneur to value contribution instead of title. But there are times where we must be conscious enough to realize who we're talking to, that we're careful, we're strategic. We don't just speak our mind. And this thought process wants you to speak your mind. If it's orange, you've really wanted to, really wanted to. If it turns red, you probably have. You probably have. And the question I want you to ask, if you have, what happened? What happened? Get tangled up with a boss? Did you end up getting fired, reprimanded, something put on your in your chart, employee chart, or on your record? To have this measurement, like in the military, that's almost deadly. It's called insubordination. That's what it's called. So be careful. As an entrepreneur, it can be very, very valuable because if you use it, you're not going to be bringing people into your circle who control the outcome who cannot contribute. You'll be very careful about those people you bring into your environment. That's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to be a little fiercely independent. Thank you for your advice, but I'm going to go this way. Be okay with that. Just be careful. Just be careful not to say something that could hurt you and or your objectives. That's teachable. One more analytical. This one is orange or red 97% of the time. It's simply a measurement of how much time you spend thinking about thinking, obsessively thinking, effortlessly thinking. Now, many of you have heard some of the discussion I have around this measurement, so I'll save you some of those ideas, like the mine where you're filling it up with water and you're not missing a nook or a cranny. To effortlessly think is an enormous gift if, it's a big if, we can control the shadow sides. Because when we think this much, this actively, and I might say this clearly, this absolutely clearly, one of the great challenges is that the mind gets fixed on the idea fixed. And it absolutely needs to be right because it's non-negotiable. And it's not just an idea, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. So if your analytical is orange or red, just ask yourself, who's the closest person to me? Companion, child, coworker, partner. Who's the closest person? If I could sit down with them, this is a homework assignment, so take some taking the time to visit. You had this assignment when you're doing coaching. Some of you still haven't done it. Sit down with someone who might be most adversely impacted, the person most adversely impacted by your need to be right. Now, you might be in an environment where you don't ever get to be right. And you may have decided to just play it safe and try to keep the peace, and so you just don't speak. If so, I want you to become conscious of how painful that is, to feel so strongly, yet have no voice. Would you look up at self-esteem for a moment, top right-hand side. See what buttons are getting pushed. When you need to be right, somebody else in a position of authority needs to be right, and they win, they summarily dismiss you. If this measurement analytical is orange or red, it is absolutely personal. It's no longer about the idea. It's about a personal attack on us. I just want to see if you've ever felt this. It's like they're calling into question my very worth as a human being. That's the first measurement, self-esteem. Or they're calling into question my ability. That's confident, the second measurement. They're calling into question my belief systems. That's valiant. To see where the buttons are getting pushed. Peaceful. Up there. Is it orange or red? Am I more likely to give in to keep the peace? Or am I more likely to fight back? I can't let it go. What buttons are getting pushed in my own assessment when I need to be right and somebody else needs to be right and they're in a position of authority? I can tell you when that happens and it becomes personal, the molecules released in our body will impair our ability to handle the situation appropriately. We probably will explode or get angry or pout or leave, but we'll most likely do something. So just take a look at analytical. The gift is effortless thinking, the ability to thoroughly process concepts without having to feel like you're working. It's effortless. It's without work. You wake up to it. You go to sleep to it. It wakes you up in the middle of the night with ideas. It's an incredible gift. However, that risk of needing to be right is so critical. Because when we need to be right, I'm going to say it again, I got my two hands clasped together. That's what I'm doing. If you want to do that, intertwine your fingers and clasp your palms together. Left hand is a person's idea. The right hand is their self-esteem. Inextricably connected. Tied to one another. It's personal. We point out a flaw in the idea, we're pointing out a flaw in the person. So when you're sitting down with this person who might have been adversely impacted when you feel strongly, and maybe they have never felt your need to be right, but maybe they felt you pout just a little bit. Be the victim. Woe is me. Okay, I'll give up myself again. That energy is discernible too. I was in a coaching session, and I discovered that my thought processes, you speaking, I discovered that my thought processes are constantly obsessively thinking. And when that happens, I need to be right. What's it like for you when I need to be right? If you know, but you push back, then encourage them to share with you what it's like for them when you're in that space. Blind to their value, to practical judgment, just needing to be right about the idea. What's that like for them? If you're more of a martyr, you might even say that. When I need to be right and other people have strong opinions, I just play the martyr role. I'm just the victim. What's it like for you when I do that? What's that like for you? When they get done sharing, say, I'll be working on that one. That's an exercise. If you haven't done it, you want to do it, and you want to do it with as many people as you might have impacted in either one of those directions. The other piece is when someone has an idea, we're going to want to step back, set our agenda aside, and listen to their idea, and find something something good in it. Something good. There's always something good in an idea. We don't have to agree with the idea. Just find something good in it. And then repeat. What I like best about your idea is this. What I like best about your idea is this. Is this. Because when we find good in a person and their self-worth is tied directly to their idea. You found good in their idea. You just found good in them. It's come down. And cooperation can flood out. So we're looking at these thought processes, disciplined. The beautiful side is thinking outside the box, being creative. The danger is needing to be right about that. The second danger is just resisting authority, period, structure. Because in our mind, we spent a life with other people imposing it on us. We don't like it. But now it's our turn to impose it on ourselves. This is our decision. Teachable? Are we resisting the messenger? Are we throwing the baby out with the bathwater? We're going to want to step back and learn to glean the good out of the conversation without throwing the person out and their voice with it. And analytical, constantly obsessively thinking and needing to be right. So in a conversation with a client this afternoon, we're talking about a teenage son. And I said, you know, as parents, we feel like we need to teach them. We're responsible for them. And when they're out of order, we need to make it clear why they're out of order. And I made this comment to him. The need to be right will never produce a result you desire. Because all we do is crush people's self-worth. We don't like it when people do it to us. Let us not do it to others. Let us find good in their ideas. Let's be affirming. Let's lift and build. It's not being naive. It's actually the greatest power on the planet. The greatest secret in all ventures, love. Winning somebody over with just love. Okay, I'm going to pause at this point. You're writing down some of those things that you've been resisting. I want to see if I can assist you with principles and practices tonight that can help you overcome those things that you're resisting so that we can get past this block. Because as I started tonight, the pain is not in the change. The pain is in the resistance to the change. There is a fear that if we change, we lose us. And the truth is this. We find us. We find us. We shut off an unhealthy habit of thinking, and we finally find us. Okay, the floor is yours. Who would like to jump out tonight?
Dave, this is Doug.
Hello, Doug.
Hi. I had a question because on my assessment, I noticed down in that section of analytical, most of them are, I've got the old assessment here, but they're most of them are green and blue.
Uh-huh.
But when I go up into self-esteem, I've got a fair amount of color in there. And that, so if I'm green down on analytical, but I go up into, what was the one you said that correlates with that one?
When I am just opening up the admin so I can take a look at this for you. And I can look directly at, can I take a look at your savvyic.com assessment? Would that be all right?
That's okay. That's not the one I'm looking at, but...
Okay, that's the one I can access really easily, so
okay.
Let's just take a look. By the way, I ask you a quick question since I'm with you. You may know this individual, and you may have heard already. Bear with me for a second. I'll pull it up. Did you know Justin Bryce?
I did.
Did you know he passed away this morning?
Justin did?
He did.
Mm-hmm. His dad just died a year or so ago in a plane crash.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
He was young. Oh, my goodness.
Well, it wasn't his age or illness that took his life, so just be with that.
Oh, he did?
So just a tragic thing. Now, I'm looking at your new assessment, and I'm going to go over to, and thank you for being on the line, because this will be applied to a lot of people. In your new assessment and disciplined thinking, you have a beautiful entrepreneurial set. Disciplined is orange to the left. That teachable measurement, which is now called respectful in the new assessment, is yellow, just occasionally a little resistance to authority. Analytical is a beautiful orange to the right, a little bit of obsessive thinking. I might tell you that that's the ideal entrepreneurial measurement. Orange, yellow, orange. Now, in the old assessment, it went probably orange, green, which, and I would know it's leaning to the toward resentful, and then analytical would be orange. So anybody on the phone, that's called the entrepreneurial set, those three measurements, because almost every entrepreneur is thinking outside the box, and I know you well enough, Doug, to know that this measurement is really beautiful, accurate, in terms of your willingness to think outside the box and find solutions to challenges. A healthy entrepreneur is going to be occasionally resistant to authority, just occasionally. And a healthy entrepreneur is going to be constantly obsessively thinking about new and better ways to do things. So I'm looking at your new assessment, and it's just beautiful. As I shared, we've got beautiful sides and a shadow side. The shadow side to discipline is, you know, needing to be right about the idea, the box, the creative solution. The respectful, just want to be really careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Glean the good in the counsel that's being given. And analytical, you're going to be constantly thinking. And the greatest risk is, well, there's actually two great risks. I shared one tonight. I'll share the other one. First great risk is we're going to need to be right. The second great risk is very few people that are just working with us, unless they're entrepreneurial, are going to be effortless thinkers. In other words, they will not think about something as thoroughly as you will. And I know you really ponder things in your heart, really think through them. And if we sit down with another person, they may not be that way.
I've noticed that. Yeah.
It's not a criticism of them. It's a requirement of you to be lifting and building them, because this is a gift. It's like someone who's got tremendous athletic prowess being critical of someone who doesn't run as fast or jump as high. Well, that's not their gift. For many people, this is just not their gift. It's yours. So when we ask someone to help us do research or explore things, they may come back to us with some ideas. And we could eat those ideas alive. We'd find five or six things they haven't even thought of. We could make them feel really small. But as Kevin Hall says, Genshai, we don't want to make anyone feel small. And so we take what they have shared with us, and we use it as a catalyst to go to the next level. But don't expect people to be as thorough as you, because they just won't be. Now, if you go to self-esteem, everybody, if you can just go to the self-esteem measurement, we're going to find out what buttons get pushed. What buttons get pushed when someone doesn't agree with me. And Doug, you're pretty darn healthy. Unconditionally, occasionally, this first measurement, whole and complete, that's what it's called in the current assessment, occasionally it's going to feel like they're calling into question your worth. So just be sensitive to that, where you step back and go, wow, they've got their own idea. They can have their own idea. It's okay. It may not be what I believe, but I'm okay with me. I'm okay with my idea. So it's just occasionally, it's just a little bit. Confident, that's probably where it's going to hit the hardest. It's like they're calling into question my ability. Because you feel really strongly about your ability. It's overfocused. Valiant, they're calling into question my beliefs. Yet I might occasionally, just occasionally, yield to them. Let them be right. What that means is, I'm going to be wrong, but I'm going to keep the peace. Well, we don't want to have to be right or wrong. We can, from a practical standpoint, say, they feel really strongly about that. It's probably important to them. It's not that important to me. Or even if I go along and do it their way, I can still hold my idea in my heart, knowing that that was the correct way to do it. I don't need to say anything. From a practical standpoint, unless, and I might add, it's life-threatening, or somebody can get hurt, life-threatening for you, or somebody else can be hurt, then you want to stand up. But just in the typical daily routine of, you know, how many hamburger buns are on a, you know, a Big Mac, whatever, you know, it's, so what? You know there are three.
Okay.
Does it mean you'd, and I haven't had one in an awful long time. I don't know why I'm thinking about it. It's because of, probably because of this very healthy diet that I'm on, this healthy eating. That's, I've taken 26 pounds off in the last 6 weeks, and that's thrilling. But occasionally, if you're watching the Olympics and McDonald's comes on, you know, it's like, oh, get off here, you change channels, you know, it's just too much. Yeah, but you're really in good shape on both of those. Perfect entrepreneurial set you want to manage, and a pretty healthy self-esteem. That's what I'm saying.
It, as I've mentioned to you before, I used to deal a lot with these issues and self-esteem, but just working with you over the last couple of years and recognizing my thought processes, it's been amazing to tell the guy in the other chair just to sit down. I'm going to sit in, I call it the director's chair. I'm going to direct my own. And just going through this process and getting better and better at it, it's been amazing on how I feel about myself and shedding that old guy, you know. I appreciate that, because I was a little concerned that that I was overreacting. And occasionally I still do. I had in a situation the other day where I lost a little bit of that control.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. That was cathartic.
Yeah. But what I have learned... Yeah. What I have learned, though, Dave, is, which is also a great blessing, is when I do sometimes say something I should not say, you know, because I feel strongly about it, but I've learned to quickly realize that I was out of line in how I handled it, and I apologize. And It has been very, very good. I think a lot of people can't have a struggle with saying, you know, I was wrong. And I was wrong in how I handled it. Maybe not the concept or the idea, but I was wrong in how I handled it. So the other day it really was good to do it that way and resolve it. And actually, the person I did it with, our relationship is much stronger now.
Yes.
Than it was before. And so I think that's another benefit of going through this with you is recognizing it's okay to say you're sorry when you shouldn't have acted or reacted the way you did. And I didn't try and explain myself, you know, or rationalize my activity or try and defend how I said things. I just took ownership of it, and they really appreciated that, and it saved a lot of, I think, a lot of heartache later on. So, thank you.
Did everybody get that advice? That was powerful. There is nothing quite like catching yourself in the middle of the moment, in the middle of the moment, and having awareness. Because sometimes we're doing damage control after. Sometimes we're unaware of it. We did damage control, and we find out that in the sequence of life as things unroll. But we realize after, we go back and do damage control. Then we find ourselves in the middle of the moment, and we stop right there and become conscious of why. And we apologize. We might actually be right about what we're talking about. That's possible. What we're apologizing for is the way we've handled it. We're saying, without saying it this way, I'm sorry for crushing your self-esteem. We're saying, I apologize. It is one of the most powerful things a human being can do in that moment, Doug. That is a tremendous sign of healthy self-esteem. Because someone without healthy self-esteem would have a hard time saying, I apologize. I shouldn't have gone there. I shouldn't have approached it that way. Could we just back up a minute? Or add to that, if you become aware of why. Sometimes we react because somebody says something to us, and we take it personally because we're guilty. Or we're embarrassed. And so we project it onto them. Yeah. Oh, come on, knock it off. Stop that. And in that moment, Doug, when you do what you just shared with us, we stop and apologize, we recognize why, and we share openly. It's extremely powerful. It's a very high level of maturity. It's wonderful when we can be there. We all are going to go into this space with these measurements. These are the hardest measurements to manage. Because we're going to need to be right about the box we're in. We're going to need to be right about this person doesn't know what they're talking about. We're going to need to be right about our ideas. Because we're going to feel strongly about them. They're going to be that important to us. And we're going to know from life experience that we are right. But rarely do we crush another person to be right. The only time you crush somebody is when life or death's on the line. When it's that critical. Could do harm. Then sometimes we have to take a really tough line. Doug, that was beautiful. So everybody grasp that. When we're managing these things, there are two things we can do that are very powerful. One, we can stop and just start laughing. Go, wow, I have to laugh at myself. I am acting so ridiculous. I apologize. And then we ask for forgiveness. We say, I'm sorry. But laughter and unvarnished transparency absolutely disarm these thought processes. That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
By the way, you and I spent a little time together in the last couple of days, and it's clear to me that your self-esteem is really getting healthy. Just getting healthy.
Well, the first time I met you and was in your home, it wasn't very healthy.
I remember.
It's fun to see you've come someplace from where you were.
Well, it wasn't, but you were. You're okay. And I love what you said, the director's chair. When you said that, I saw the picture of a director's chair with a name on the back and a megaphone on it, you know. That's where you want to sit and be in control of your life. You're directing your life. That's a great reference point. I'm directing these thought processes instead of having them run the show. I'm telling them how to do what they need to do. I'm managing them. That's excellent. Anything else I can do for you tonight, Doug?
No, I appreciate it. I just had a few minutes to get on, and I got to run into a meeting, but thank you so much.
You go do that. Thank you. Now,
all right.
Anyone else tonight that I can serve? What are you resisting? What are you fighting? What is it that's holding you back and has been maybe for a long time?
Dave, this is Diana.
Hi, Diana.
I heard, I guess, how should I put it? when you were talking about the martyr, bell started going off in my head. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, I am not the person that rebels in a way that cuts somebody down. And what I seem to have taught myself to do more than anything is to just give in. And what I've realized is that makes me little, and I'm not a little person, and I've got a conflict going on inside of me because I know I'm a much bigger person, and I have a lot of talents and skills and abilities, and I know what I'm doing in my line of work. But yet when I am up against authority and somebody else wants to run the show, I'll give in every time because I just don't want to deal with it. It's almost like I'm burned out from the old days. So can you talk a little bit more about...
Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, about being a martyr and allowing yourself to be little.
Well, you've mentioned the little, and Kevin Hall wrote a book called Aspire. It was about a series of words, and one of the words was genshai. If you haven't heard this word, everybody can just write it down, G-E-N-S-H-A-I, genshai. It's an Indian word, and it really is the practice of agape love. You know, agape love is a principle. The practice of it is really genshai, which means never make anyone feel small. Now, we can see that as applies to another. Never make anyone feel small. And he adds at the end, comma, including yourself. Including yourself. So we never want to give in. And many of you, if you look up at that peaceful measurement in self-esteem, you're going to find an orange measurement. Or tolerant. You're going to be sacrificing your time and your energy and even your well-being to be serving everyone. You're going to make yourself feel small. And when we feel small, we can feel victimized. You know, just nobody cares about me. The truth is I don't care about myself. I don't care enough about myself to stand up and be counted. Nobody's served when we're in that victim space. When we're in that victim space, it's like we have this giant hole that needs to be filled, and we need everybody else to fill it for us. That's what happens. And when we have to keep playing small, we're not getting anything to fill our soul. We're feeling empty. And we find somebody we know who looks like they can fill our hole in our soul. You know, we tell them our sad story. And they give us as much as they've got, but they look like they could give so much more, so we can actually resent the person for not showing up for us. So we feel small again. They didn't love us enough to help us, to serve us. When in fact they may have given us all they got because it takes the rest of their energy just to hold up their facade and look like they're okay. They're really not. They look okay. They look like they could give us more, but they gave us all they got. It's just not enough because we can never get enough from another person. We can never get enough. The only way we can get it is to step into their world, take down their walls of resistance, and have their cooperation and productivity flood out over us. That's what fills our soul. It's the joy from truly serving. Now, victims don't serve. Victims give with strings. They want to be thanked. They want to be appreciated. They want to be valued. They want to be liked. And so they give to be liked. They give to be appreciated. And if someone just doesn't get it, they're not going to give it, and wish the victim is just going to now get to be hurt again. These are interesting pieces around victimhood, and I've shared this before on a Tuesday night call, and I've always added this, that I have the right to talk about this because I can be a really big victim. You know, no one works harder than me, and I'm so tired, and I got so much responsibility, and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like I can just feel the people sticking their finger down the throat, you know, when their back's turned to me or my back's turned to them. we get absolutely nothing out of victimhood other than exhausting everyone around us. That's all we do. A victim's a taker, not a giver. But yet it's in the giving, not the giving to get. It's in the giving. It's the caring enough about a person to listen, take down their walls, that we become the beneficiaries of the very thing that fills our soul. That's our cooperation and productivity. So, it's so important, Diana. And this is a really slippery slope. It's like, you know, there's five cookies on the plate and there's five people plus you, and you say, oh, go ahead and have the last cookie, I'll go make another batch. You know, if we approach life from that direction, we're going to be very heavy-hearted. We can be very selfish. Not because we're stealing or taking from the standpoint of more than we should get. We just are focused on us and our needs. And we're feeling hurt and damaged and less than. That's a decision. The way we step out of that is step into people's worlds, take down those walls, be assertive. The slippery slope is this. We can go from being small to being a giant killer, and a killer in the sense of, you know, nobody is going to control me and nobody's going to tell me what to do. That's the slippery slide where we go from being passive and small to some people use the word a man killer. You know, we become tough and mean, and that's as unhealthy on the other end of the spectrum. The middle of this piece isn't the fighter on one side, isn't the passive on the other side. It's the person who just owns their belief and then makes a conscious choice to what serves them best. Is it to serve this person? Is it to let that person be right? Without giving up our idea. To do what somebody else wants us to do doesn't mean we have to give up us. We just consciously say, right now, from a common sense, they write the check. So I'll do that. But just be careful not to go to the other side. But it's time, Diana, for you to stand up and be counted. Because you matter. You're unique. You're priceless. You're irreplaceable. You've got strong ideas and opinions. When you have strong ideas and opinions, don't fight for your opinion. And don't give it up. Step into a person's world and hear them out. And find something good in their idea. It's so disarming. And all of a sudden, their walls come down, and you're having a conversation, come up with something really fun, clever, and if you've got the best idea, it often surfaces, and you get more of what you actually wanted by finding good in their idea. Yeah, this is a very powerful place to be, where it's not, woe is me, I'm showing up for the world. I'm going to show up whole and complete, and I know I fill my soul by doing that. I don't know if that helps you at all. You want to pursue that a little bit more and see if I can provide any more information?
I'm a whole lot better than what I was because I've been, you know, following you for so long now. I mean, a whole lot better. I quit a
yes,
job because of that. I quit the best job of my entire life because the company decided to hire this big deal snazzy advertising guy who absolutely knew nothing of book marketing, and he just, well, there was a lot of different reasons why he didn't get along with me. One of them was because I reminded him of his ex-wife, and he told me that, but I didn't have the skills that I have now, and I know that would never happen again. And I'm working on something at my current job right now that I'm really, really, really proud of myself because even though I'm in a lower position, I have been able to get them to listen to me and have them ask me for some ideas. And I presented them very professionally and blew their socks off. So I know I'm getting better, but I
can you hear yourself talking about this? Isn't this awesome?
Yeah, it is.
Awesome.
But I can see where in other, you know, I'm prone to just saying I don't want to fight for this. Like, for instance, my girlfriends they'll get on a kick about some political issue or some environmental issue, and they get so mad at me because I don't get on it with them, and I don't fight, and I don't sign petitions, and it's like I don't like the conflict, but yet they get upset with me because they know that I know the issues, and I can verbalize it better than they can, and then they get mad at me because I sit in the background and I don't do anything about it. And I probably should start just standing up for myself a little bit more, because I can see that it's just as destructive to be rebellious about it as it is to just sit in the background and you know, just be the ice queen.
Isn't laughter wonderful?
And that was the name that I have been called before.
Oh.
By past employees, and I laugh at it today, but yeah, I guess there's a fine line when to fight and when not to, and when to just lay the foundation out. I think that's a lot of times people have their own agendas, and they don't know that there's another underlying one that they may be missing, and it all lies in communication, basically, I guess, which I haven't been really willing to do up until this point.
I loved your laugh. I loved your laugh, because for those on the phone who struggle with sometimes feeling like being a victim, laughing at yourself, Og says, you know, I never want to go too long for my cot. Man is most comical when he can't laugh at himself. Sometimes one of the great things we can do is just laugh at ourselves. Say, wow, what am I doing? Wow. So keep that in mind, everyone. Laughter is just a great medicine when we're in that kind of a woe is me kind of space. You've mentioned something there's some controversy. So let's explore it for a moment. You've got girlfriends who want to have a big battle about the economy or about recycling or about whatever it might be, some cause
right.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is check in with yourself and make sure you're feeling okay today about yourself. And if you could say, I'm not going to take anything personal, I've got my ideas, they've got theirs, and they're going to need to be right, and I'll share my ideas, they don't agree with me, that's okay. If you could be that conscious, you could go in and have a healthy discussion with someone. There are people who just like to have healthy debates. The challenge
mm-hmm.
is they may be doing so to prove something about their self-esteem, or they may in fact be okay. And they just love to have healthy debates, but little do they know that the thing they're debating is like having an orb out in the middle of the room with everybody in a circle around it, like we're talking about it. Because some people can do that. There are very few, but they can. Almost everybody else says something about the orb, and someone else is taking it personally. That's just how it is. We need to talk about this problem in the office. It is time for us to cut expenses on office supplies. Well, the person over there on the other side who was responsible for this is starting to feel like an idiot for not coming up with the ideas that everybody else is coming up with, because that's their job. Rarely is a conversation about the problem. Rarely, rarely, rarely. If you're going to engage in a healthy debate with someone, just make sure you're healthy enough in the moment to go have the debate, Because the last thing you want to do is get your feelings hurt and then drag that around for a few days with obsessive thought, because you won't be able to let it go. So you want to be extremely conscious if you're going to go into a fun conversation. If it's going to have a little bit of negativity, a little bit of an edge to it, you may choose not to participate at all. You may need to have different friends. That's a possibility. And if it's one where there is no concern for the people involved, you never want to engage. Because there are very few things that we want to yell and scream about and hurt somebody. What good does it do to talk about global warming if we're destroying people talking about it? Global warming could destroy people. And we're destroying people having the conversation. I'm just using that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be very careful how we handle our conversations. We make it very clear that this is my opinion. I feel very strongly about it. And I think the world would be better if everyone listened to what I have to say. But I know not everybody's going to agree with me. And I want to give you your permission to have your own ideas. I just want to share with you something that may serve. See if you can find just something good in it. What an invitation to give before you ever share. Then you share. So this is a tough one, confrontation. In our new training that's coming out this summer, we're calling it carefrontation. Because most of the time, confrontation is when someone's not performing adequately or they have a different opinion the way things should be done and it's not appropriate. And we want to deal with their inappropriate behavior. And so we feel like we either have to confront them and blow up the relationship potentially, and instead we just step into their world and listen to them. I know this is something you feel strongly about. Share with me what you're thinking. Oh, well, tell me a little bit more about that. Till they feel understood. Some people at that point will let go of their whole opinion because it really wasn't about the opinion. It was about protecting their self-esteem. It was about feeling better about themselves. They really aren't that openly rebellious. They just want to be understood. And some people just, on the other hand, just cling to what they think, and then you get to make a choice. And this is your choice, Diana. Do I want to hang out with that person? Do I truly want to invest part of my life in that relationship? You said you quit a job because of a person. That probably wouldn't happen today.
Mm-hmm.
It may still have happened
Absolutely.
Today, because you may have said, I deserve better than this. I'll take a different position than to spend my life investing in this relationship. It's not worth the money. I get a little bit more money here, but it's so demeaning, and my self-worth is worth more than the salary I'm getting paid. Now you might have made the decision differently, but you may have made the same one.
That's true.
And congratulations on what you're doing right now.
Thank you. I do feel real good about what I'm doing now. And I lost my train of thought. I think the whole thing is more of an internal thing with me. It's like just what goes on in my head and my heart when I feel like I don't want to be confrontational with somebody instead of I want to push the fast forward button. It's like, and if I can't push the fast forward button and try to fix it real fast, you know, I know all that stuff. I know I need to sit down with them and slow it down and talk with them and everything. I just want to escape. I just, you know, it's like I just don't want to go there. I'll let them run the meeting, or I'll let them take over this committee, or I'll let them have their say or whatever. And so it's more of an attitude within me, I think, that's just as destructive. That's what I got out of tonight, is that is just as destructive as being rebellious to me. And it shuts me down, so I'm not giving to the world.
If it's making you feel small.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can say, it's really not that important to me. Not really. I made it important, and then I'm going to feel hurt and may feel small if it doesn't work. But is it really that important to me? If it's not, why give it any energy at all? But if it's
right.
making you feel small, you're going to want to stand up a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let the world make you feel small. You're too magnificent.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, this has been a fun discussion tonight. This is an area I want you to think about this week, all of you. As you're going through the week, keep asking yourself, what is it that I'm resisting? What I heard Diana say is occasionally she's still resisting standing up and not feeling small. That's an important piece, just to be awake. Again, slippery slope, because we don't want to go to the other direction. We just want to bring it into balance. It might be that there's an action that I've been resisting. I'll close with mine. It's now 6 weeks. I mentioned I've lost 26 pounds. I'm pretty excited about that. What am I doing? I'm eating really healthy, appropriate portions, and exercising. It's amazing what impact that's having on my body. I have some supplementation, dealing with vitamins and inflammation, etc. But the most important piece is a healthy diet. Not a thing where you leave yourself starving every day. Just eating really good stuff and exercising. But I've been putting this off for a long time. It's been a couple of years since I've been at this weight. If I keep processing this, in another couple of months, I'll be down to the weight I was when we got married. Oh, my goodness. And how I'm feeling because of that, the energy that I have, the alertness that I'm feeling, the lack of heart palpitations, if you will, or whatever, that was mine. That was the thing I kept resisting. But the things I really want, an active lifestyle, health, etc., were right behind what I was resisting. Can I resist and not eat that extra piece of cake or a piece of cake at all, or that donut, or two helpings of whatever, or a late-night snack or watching TV or something? Can we resist that? Can we be structured enough, disciplined enough, to I command and I'll obey my own command? That's mine. I'll just be transparent with you. What's yours? What's yours? And how long do you want to let it run your life? Let's make a list of those things this week. Maybe pick just one of them and say for the rest of the week, you are not going to run my life. Then just see how strong and powerful that unhealthy habit of thinking is. Like Doug said, let's get back here in what I call the observer's chair. I liked his remark, the director's chair. And let us direct ourselves and see if we can get an accountability buddy. That could be a spouse, a companion, a close friend, family member, an adult child, whatever it might be. Let's find an accountability partner who will talk to us and we can talk to them, have them pick one thing, and you hold them accountable, have them help you hold accountable, and see if we can't for the next few weeks start to lessen the grip of that resistance on our life. That's freedom. We want freedom. We want freedom. Freedom is being the master of your thoughts. Freedom is being control of these things that have been controlling us. Now, I'm not here to tell you this is going to be the down another 30 pounds and everything's going to be wonderful. Just one day at a time. Because my thought process is going to really scream loudly, as I'm sure some of yours can. So let's do something practical. Let's pick that one thing, the biggest thing that's been holding us back. And let's start doing something about it. Let's actually change. Because we'll find the resistance the pain is not in the change. This has been joyful. The pain was in all those years of resistance to this. So let's find out what it is. Let's take this on. And let's go to scroll number 6 this week. Scroll number 6, I'll be the master of my emotions. Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. Okay, everybody, let's come off of mute, say goodnight. Look forward to being back with you next Tuesday. And we're going to be taking on joy in the journey. So just come off of mute and say goodnight, please.
Good night, Dave.
Good night. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for all your participation, Doug and Diane. I sure appreciate it tonight.